Are you looking to connect with a diverse audience of developers? Look no further. You can partner with us here at the Code Newbie Podcast, and we'll help get your message out to our incredible listeners in an ad just like this one, led by me, your host. Contact us by emailing sponsors@codenewbie.org. Welcome to the Code Newbie Podcast, where we talk to people on their coding journey in hopes of helping you on yours. I'm your host, Saran, and before we kick off the show, I want to tell you about our incredible sponsors. So we've had some pretty great people on the show so far. We've had Zed Shaw, Raquel Velez, Tiffany Bell, but they're pretty well-established developers, and we wanted to bring you more stories of code newbies, people who've made recent transitions into a technical career. And here to tell you her story, I'm excited to have on the show LaToya Allen. She is a junior software engineer at Avant, a Chicago startup. LaToya, you want to say hi?
Hello.
So tell us, what first inspired you to be a software engineer?
So one day I was hanging out on my couch and I was bored because my yoga class got canceled and I needed something to do. So, you know, when you're bored and you just kind of surf the internet, how you can get into these little nooks and crannies of the web. So I found Codecademy, which I'm sure many of your Code Newbie listeners are familiar with.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, and I ended up just spending hours and hours on this website playing around with code. So from that point, I decided that coding should be a great hobby for me. And I didn't, for some reason, I don't know why, but I just didn't picture it as a career. So I started going to meetups in the city. The first one I discovered was the Chicago Women Developers, which is at 1871 in Chicago. And if you have any code newbies in Chicago, they should definitely check out 1871. It's an amazing space. At any rate, so yeah, I started going to events with the Chicago Women Developers, and they had low-cost classes, which was very helpful because, you know, you don't want to spend too much on a hobby. And I learned how to code that way.
And so what was it that got you so hooked? Because you were kind of doing it for hours in your spare time, and it sounds like you invested a lot of time, if not money, you know, a lot of time into developing this hobby. What was it that kept you going?
I think it's the same thing that keeps me going now. There's this amazing feeling you get when you solve a really difficult problem or when the light bulb kind of goes on in your head. And I love that feeling. So
it's a great feeling.
Yeah.
It's a powerful feeling too. Yeah.
Plus, I mean, at the end, for me personally, programming just kind of feels like I'm solving fun problems that are really puzzles, and I kind of can't believe that someone's actually paying me to do it because it's so much fun,
yeah.
You know? And I know that's not the case for everyone. Some people try to pick it up and they don't like it, and, you know, everyone is different. You have to do what works for you. But for me, it's just a lot of fun.
So when you were doing this as a hobby, your main job was what?
I was bartending, actually.
So what made you – go ahead.
I was going to say I can pour a killer shot of Jameson.
I can barely open a bottle of champagne, so you're definitely winning in that category. And I used to be like a waiter too, so I had to learn that stuff. It didn't get very far.
It's hard.
I like to think so, yes. It definitely wasn't because I was bad at it. It's because it was hard. So – what made you get to the point where you said, this is a fun hobby, I'm done with, you know, pouring awesome shots of whiskey, I want to move into the software engineer world at a professional level? What made you get there?
So I remember I was going, like I said, going to these little meetups, and I met a woman named Angelia, and she at the time was a hairdresser, and she was an apprentice at a company called Eighth Light, which is here in Chicago. They're a consultancy, and they specialize in test-driven development and clean code. And I was fascinated because at the time, I thought, and I think that a lot of people who want to get into development think this as well, that if you wanted to be a software engineer, a web developer, a designer, that you needed a piece of paper from a four-year institution, and that was the only way to do it. So I just didn't think that I, you know, could get a job in this industry, and I thought it would just be a really awesome hobby. But I met her, and, you know, she kind of talked to me about her experiences being an apprentice, and it fascinated me. And I thought, like, maybe that's something I want to do, but I don't have enough experience. So I just kind of kept going to meetups and learning as much as I could in that way.
And so what made that push? What made you say, okay, I'm done with this. Now let's make this into a career?
Okay. So at one of the Chicago Women Developer Meetups, I met a woman named Sue Kim, who was also at 8th Light. And she was telling me about the apprenticeship program. She said, obviously, this is something you really like to do. You know, you've come to several of these meetups. You should just come by on Friday. Friday is at 8th Light. I believe they still have them, but they have something called ALU, which stands for 8th Light University, where anyone from the public can go. And it's free lunch. And usually there's tech talks, and you can pair program with one of their software craftsmen. And she said that I should go and check it out and kind of, you know, see if I liked the environment. And I had nothing better to do on a Friday afternoon, and I'm all about free food. If you want to get me somewhere, just offer me free food. So I went, and there was a talk. I don't remember what it was about. There was some programming, which was way above my head. And then I sat down, and I talked to a wonderful gentleman named Doug Bradbury, who is a software craftsman there. And he just kind of asked me about my experience and my journey. And he said, okay, well, you're going to go in this room and you're going to talk to Ben Voss. And then I talked to Ben Voss for a while. And then he was like, okay, you're going to go in this other room and you're going to talk to Kelly and you guys are going to pair together.
Did you just get tricked into an interview?
Yes. Tricked by the guise of free food. So I ended up, and Kelly's awesome. So I ended up pairing with her on a code kata. I don't know if you're familiar with code katas. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, tell us about it.
Okay, so a coding kata is a small problem that you solve, and you solve it by test driving this problem. And before you start the problem, it's best to find an expert in the field who's already solved it and follow the way that they do it. And the idea is that repetition will lead you to successfully being able to program a kata yourself. And that sort of level of repetition will kind of bleed into the other code that you write. So we worked on something called the Coin Changer kata, which is awesome. You should definitely check that out. And then I think at the time they didn't have a student or a junior apprenticeship. They only had residents, which I wasn't ready for. So they ended up giving me a tutorship, which is something they just made up for me. I don't think anyone before me did it, and I don't think anyone after me did it either.
Uh-huh. That's awesome.
It was really cool. So I was bartending in River North at that time, and like once a week I was meeting up with Mike Ebert, one of their software craftsmen, and he was just teaching me the basics of clean code, of solid principles, of test-driven development. And then I think after that summer, I worked with him a little more in the fall, and I eventually became a resident that winter.
So what does it mean to be a resident?
Okay. So there are two levels of apprenticeship at 8th Light. Actually, there may not be anymore, but when I was there were two levels. And at the time, it was a novice, and there is a resident. And a resident, the only major difference is that as a resident, you have to work there Monday through Friday. And also, it's a paid apprenticeship. So that would be like the other big difference. And as a resident, you get to work on two primary things. One would be skill building projects, and the other would be client work, which was awesome because, you know, someone who's self-taught, who has no idea what they're doing, to have these people like take me under their wing and teach me as much as they can and get to work on real projects so early in my career was pretty awesome.
And so you were a resident. And how long does this program last for?
So it's different for everyone. It really depends on your mentor and your skill level. I took a year-long residency. And I think, let me think about this for a second. So there's actually a third level. I forgot about that. So there is the novice apprenticeship, the resident apprenticeship, and then there's a craftsman apprenticeship. So if you are a software engineer or a software developer with some experience already under your belt, you can do a craftsman apprenticeship at 8th Light as well. And I think that's between 1 and 3 months. And that's really just to absorb in the culture. And the residency is typically between, I think, 6 months and a year.
So what was the difference in the quality of learning and the speed that you learned when you compare your kind of self-taught experience versus being in a more structured environment at an actual dev shop?
Well, I'd say at first when I was teaching myself, there was such a huge learning curve that I was learning a lot, you know, but then I kind of hit this weird wall where I could only do so much on my own. And it was really great that I was able to start getting tutored because, you know, again, the level of learning went up a lot because I was learning from an actual person who was developing software significantly for quite some time. But I hit a wall with that as well, where I wasn't learning as much just because working at home by yourself, you know, on your own time, even if you do have someone to kind of guide you, you can really only do so much that way. So then I became once I got into the residency program, I mean, my learning skyrocketed. It was insane how much I was learning at once. I think a part of that is because they have an awesome library of books available there. So whatever you want to read, you can read. And also the feedback loop is incredibly fast. And then there's also just the casual conversation. I mean, if you go into the kitchen to get a cup of coffee, you might leave the kitchen 5 minutes later knowing something incredible about a problem that you were trying to solve just through casual conversation.
So if you had better tools, better books, better resources, you know, better kind of material, how close do you think you could have come to having that apprenticeship experience on your own? Is that even comparable?
I don't think so, because first of all, what is better, right? Like who's to say like book A is any better than book B? I think when you're first starting out, you don't know what that means. For example, I think the first programming book that I bought was like Cracking the Code Interview, and it was about interviewing at Google and Facebook. And, you know, being a code newbie, obviously you want to get good enough to kind of solve those problems, but that was too big of a jump. You know, that probably wasn't the book that I should have started with. So the next book I grabbed was a book on metaprogramming, which is something that senior level software developers often, you know, practice. And again, too big of a jump, but I didn't really know that. So I think that having someone to kind of guide you in the beginning is so important, because you really want to get that strong foundation of what you need to know to get to those, you know, higher level positions. But like not knowing where to start is very difficult.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I feel like there's this gap that happens where as a code newbie, you have some degree of a foundation, right? You're doing Treehouse, Code School, Code Academy, all these online resources, you're reading books, you know, you understand the basics of coding, but then going from that to actually having the skills and experience to get your first job, that feels like there's kind of a gap there. And you were able to fill it, you know, with the apprenticeship.
Yes, absolutely. I'm very lucky.
Yeah. And, you know, the problem is that there aren't that many apprenticeships like that around. I think, you know, for some time I did research on what was available, and I think I came up with maybe a handful. I didn't really find too many. So I'm wondering, for people who need to fill that gap and who want to get the experience and the guide, and I think the guidance is really the big thing that you mentioned. That's, you know, a huge advantage to over, you know, books and stuff. How can they find that guidance? How can they level up to a point where they can get a junior level job?
Well, I was lucky because a part of the apprenticeship program is that you automatically get a mentor, which is awesome. So whenever you have questions or you need feedback, you know, you always have someone who's there to not only help you, but also keep you accountable. And I think that if there were more resources out there like what you're doing, honestly, I don't think that it would be as hard, because honestly, anyone can pick up the series of books that I read and read them. But like I said before, it's figuring out what those are. I know that the one thing that I hear from companies often is that they can't find good developers, and even junior developers, they can't find good junior developers. So I don't understand why more companies actually don't take the lead on this and have apprenticeship programs. I mean, every company is different. Every company's ecosystem is different. So why not have someone who you know wants to level up and have them come in and teach them the skills that you would expect them to know to ace an interview at your company while building code for you? You know, I think that like that is something that companies can do. But as far as individual people, find as many mentors as you can. And that's something that I'm still doing today. I mean, my thing is once a mentor, always a mentor. So my official mentor at 8th Light will always be, to me, my mentor. But at my new job, I've definitely been able to find those. And I would just say try to find people that want to help the newbies. Go to meetups, you know, sign up at codenewbie.com. That's always a great option. Just find people who want to help beginners, and there's so many out there, and like read the books that they suggest and build the apps that they suggest and like really take in as much information as you can. I would also say, regardless of what language you want to learn or what framework you want to be proficient in, learn the basics of what good code is. You know, I think that that can be subjective, but I think that there's kind of always these consistent ideas of what that means.
So tell me a little bit more about your mentor and that relationship. What kinds of things did you go to your mentor for? How did they help? What was that all about?
Okay. So 8th Flight is also an agile shop. So we always worked in iterations. So every week I had something called an IPM, which stands for iteration planning meeting with my mentor. And we would plan out what I was supposed to do that week. And this always included something that I was supposed to read. There was always a book for me to read. This included a minimum of 3 blog posts, which I think at first it might have actually been like 1 a week, but I was able to negotiate that down because it's a lot of writing.
That is a lot of writing.
And I was always doing one of 2 things. I was either, you know, like I mentioned before, working on a skill building project or working on client work. So I had to, you know, we mapped out my week. We kept in constant contact throughout the week. We would meet, I think, at least once, sometimes twice a week, always either after work or before work, to kind of talk about my progress, to talk about bottlenecks in my progress, to talk about mistakes I was making, to talk about what I was doing well, to talk about anything really. And then at, you know, the same time next week, I would present all of my work, and then we would kind of go over what we'd do for the following week. And we also had something called weekly retrospectives, which I think towards the end became like bi-weekly, because we didn't need them as much. But my mentor and I would go into a room with a giant whiteboard, and he would line up 3 columns, a smiley face, a frowny face, a meh, and then there was always an action item column. And then we talked about what worked that week, what didn't work, things that I thought I needed to improve on personally, and whatever I wanted to work on would kind of go in the action items column.
So it sounds like your mentor was almost like an accountability buddy.
In a way, yes.
Interesting, because I'm wondering, you know, there's kind of a cap on how many developers are available, let alone how many want to be mentors. So I'm wondering, can a lot of the responsibilities you just described be, you know, taken on by just another code newbie, right? And we're just kind of holding each other accountable for our learning.
I think so. I would say that as long as you know what it is that you want to learn and you have an idea of, here's my thing, you have to do what works for you. You know, if they're keeping, some people need someone to keep them accountable. I'm absolutely one of those people. You know, I love having accountability buddies. And that sometimes just means like me joining the book club at work, because I know I have to finish one chapter of like this particular book every week. And then I'm going to get in a room with other people and discuss it, you know. But I think that can definitely work. If I would just suggest that if you're going to do that, if you're going to have 2 code newbies together, make sure that like the things that you want to work on are going to build specific skills that will help you to get a job in the future, or that will help you to level up in some way.
Yeah, that makes sense. So do you graduate from an apprenticeship? Is that how that works?
So I know that they don't like the term graduate. Okay. I don't know what the preferred thing
you
is.
Leave? That sounds like you didn't like it. You finish. Okay. You no. finish. Like so you storm mean? Out.
No. You storm. No. There's no storming
no
out.
No storming. Okay. You finish the apprenticeship.
So at the end of your apprenticeship, you enter something called your challenges, and it's very challenging. And it's, you get a 2-week pairing tour where you pair with, I think it's 8 people who are going to be on a board for you, who ultimately decide whether or not you join the company. Ooh. And this is very, it's very scary. And so you spend 2 days, I think, pairing with each of them on whatever client project they're on. And then at the end of that 2 weeks, you're given this super awesomely difficult, soul-wrenching problem to solve. Oh, you have 2 weeks to solve it.
Okay.
And then at the end of that 2 weeks, you have to present a talk. You have to give a talk to the company. which they don't tell you like ahead of time what the talk topic is. And then you have to present your code to your board. And then your board sits in this room and they comb over all of the code that you've gone over, that you've written during your apprenticeship. They read every blog post and they decide whether or not you should join the company.
Holy crap.
I know.
That is so hardcore.
It's hardcore, yes. And then you either become a software craftsman, or sometimes, you know, they'll say, well, you're close, you need to like work on these few things, and then you can like reapply. So for me, mine was a little different because at the end of my apprenticeship, I decided that I wanted to work for a product company and not for a consultancy.
Mm.
So, which was a very sad moment for me because I met so many amazing people there and I learned so much, and I'll always be thankful for the education that I got at Eighth Flight. But at the end of the day, I'm more of a product company person. I do like consulting, but there are things that you get to work on at a product company that you don't get to work on working for a consultancy.
So let's talk about that. Let's talk about kind of at the end of your apprenticeship, you're deciding, what do I do next? What are some things that you considered and how did you make your decision?
Well, for me, I just really wanted to work at a product company. So for example, I really like data. I think data is cool. I also really like functional programming. I love Clojure. I'm very curious about Haskell. And I'm also very curious about R. And I knew that if I stayed at Eighth Flight as a consultant, that I would be doing consulting. But my thing is, I really don't like meetings. I'm not a meeting person. You know,
wait,
like,
do people like me? Are there people who like meetings?
There are people that like them enough to have them.
That's fair. Okay.
When I was interviewing at companies, I made it very clear. I said, I don't ever want to be, I was like, I want the maximum amount of meeting time that I can really handle is like an hour a week.
And a week. Oh, wow. That's not a lot.
I know. And that's my biggest thing. It's like, I think that for me, I really wanted, like, I had this idea of what my dream job would be. And I was like, I'm going to go and get that.
So what was this idea?
Well, okay. So here's my thing. I don't want to have to be at work until like 10, you know, because I just feel like I don't want to have to ride the crowded train. I don't want to get up early. And if I do get up early, it's because I'm like dancing around my living room, blasting Beyonce or something, not because I like have to be on a crowded train. So there's that. Plus I'm not really a morning person. I wanted to not have to pay for food because, as I mentioned several times during this interview, I'm a fan of free food.
So you wanted like catered lunch every day?
And breakfast.
And breakfast. Okay.
Yes. I know how ridiculous this sounds, but I think, like, you know, we're software engineers. You should go after what you want.
It's, you know, it's not so much that. I'm just wondering how many places fit that. Like, I'm wondering how many people just got totally axed off the list for not having both of those. I feel like there are a lot of companies who just automatically you're disqualified.
Well, and my thing is this, you know, you obviously like go for what you want and then negotiate a little bit, like one catered meal a day. Fine. I guess I can take that. It doesn't have to be two. I happen to get two catered meals a day. So that's awesome. But like, I would never have turned down an offer because a company only had one.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Okay, so let's see, what else did I want? So for me, education and learning is really important. And I think that most companies want you to learn as much as you can. I know that there are some companies, though, that they don't really want people to think for themselves. They don't really want to challenge their developers. And I didn't talk to any of those companies, but they're out there. You know, they're definitely out there. So that was huge for me.
How do you rate that when you're talking to it? Because that's a really big one, especially if it's your first job. You know, if it's your first developer job, it's really important to be in an environment that encourages learning and growth and personal development. How do you see if they do that when you're talking to companies?
Well, you just have to ask.
But what do you ask?
What do you ask? I think for most of the companies that I talked to, I only went after companies that I knew had those kind of learning environments. And some of them, you know, by reputation, some of them I knew by just like casual conversation, just going out in the community and being involved to hear things like that. For me, when I was at Avant, when I went on that particular interview, I got a tour of the office. And at that time, there happened to be some kind of like lunch and learn, I think is what we call. Yes, it's called lunch and learn. There happened to have been a lunch and learn going on at that time where like anyone in the entire company, doesn't matter what your position is, you don't have to be a programmer, but you can go into this like awesome conference room and people are teaching you something. And that's really great. They do that once a week. So that was really important. Also, I heard that they would be giving SQL lessons, and they do. They gave SQL 101 classes. They had three of them. They were spread out during 3 weeks. So that was pretty cool. Plus, there's the whole like, do you offer a conference budget? How much money am I allowed to use per year to go to workshops and to order books and order like whatever other resources that are going to help me to better my job? Not to mention, there are a lot of companies that don't want you to program 8 hours a day. They'll tell you you're going to write code between 4 to 6 hours a day, and we fully expect you to be like reading or doing whatever it is that you need to learn for the rest of that time. So it's just about asking those questions. And that really just comes down to not being afraid to ask.
Mm. Okay, so two meals, some kind of an education education budget. I think that's so funny. But you know, I respect that you know what you want, and it sounds like you got it. But two meals, education budget, not working late. What were some of your other requirements?
So for me, personal time off is really important. As social as I am, and as loud of a personality as I have, I'm actually more of an introvert. So for me, every now and then, I want the opportunity to work from home. I also would like to do some more traveling this year. So that means that like I may have to work a couple of days in another city. So I would never take advantage of like a personal time off, you know, scenario. But being able to have that personal time off is really important to me. Being able to just say, you know what, like I'm cranky. I want to work from my couch. And I would also like to point out that I understand completely that I kind of have to be coming from a place of privilege to say these things. Not everyone is in my position. You know, I'm single. I don't have any children. For me, like I kind of had time to poke around and find the job that I want. I didn't really have like anyone else depending on me. So I think that like I'm really lucky in that way. And I understand completely that that's not everyone's situation. You know, if you have to take a job because you need a job, then take that job, you know. Don't go in and say, I'm not going to take this job because you're not going to offer me fruit in the morning. Don't do that. Take that job.
So it sounds like a lot of the requirements we talked about so far are not specific to being a software engineer. It's kind of specific to just like the culture almost, and you know, anybody can ask for the meals and not working late and things like that. Were there any developer or like tech requirements that you had? Did you came from an agile consulting firm, it sounds like. Did you require that they were also agile? Did you require code reviews? Like, are there any kind of like code specific things that you were looking for?
Absolutely. So my one thing is, so when I was eighth light, I really got to learn a lot about Ruby, Clojure, and Java. And I knew that I wanted to, that I would take a job working in like Ruby or Python, even though I'm not really that familiar with Python, but or like a functional programming language. And one thing that really attracted me to Avant was that they have Haskell. They had recently acquired Ready for Zero, which is 100% Clojure shop. So that's really cool. So for me, it was about being in an environment where I could, if I wanted to, just like pick up another language, you know. We have a Haskell team of one, for example, right now. But our main Haskell developer has gone out of his way to give me lots of resources and books and tips about learning in that way. So that was really important to me, you know, for me to be able to say, even if I'm not working in like language A every day, I want to be exposed to it. And I want to be around people who are excited to expose me to it. Let's see what else. I come from, A-Flight is also really big on test-driven development, which I'm a huge fan of, probably because it's the first thing I learned, to be perfectly honest. I know it doesn't work for everyone, but being in an environment where I could continue to grow my TDD skills was important. And while I don't always have the opportunity to practice TDD because it's not always the right solution, I definitely get to work in a awesome environment that has lots of tests. So that's really good. What else? Also, I really wanted to work with data. That was something that I was looking for. Working in a consultancy, you typically are going to build out a specific feature And typically you're not going to see sensitive data either. But, you know, working in a database, you get to see data, you get to manipulate data, you get to play around with data. So that was another thing that I was looking for.
So how long was your job search?
How long was my job search? Okay, so I left Eighth Light the week before my birthday. The week of my birthday, I contacted a few companies. I think I got an offer maybe 2 weeks after looking. And I ended up accepting this particular offer, I think, 3 weeks after I started looking.
So a total of 3 weeks?
Yes.
That's not bad. That is really good. What do you think made that job search so short?
Well, before I started, first of all, like I mentioned, I took like a week off the week of my birthday. I didn't know what to expect job searching. I just knew that I wanted to decompress and relax and catch up on sleep and things like that. And I think sleep is important. So mm-hmm. I think that having that opportunity to kind of reset myself and refocus myself really helped make it better. Also, I applied at a lot of companies. I didn't hear back actually from quite a few companies, which was really surprising for me because I think that, I mean, when you look at a company and you see what they want and you have what they want, it's always really surprising when you don't get that call back. Mm. But such is life. So also,
how many companies did you apply in total?
Maybe, let's see, I don't know, to be perfectly honest, because
more than 10?
No, definitely not.
Oh, less than 10. Okay.
Yeah, like 5 or 6.
Okay.
Let me see here. So I think one thing that made it a lot faster was that I talked to companies that I either A, already had a relationship with, or B, I knew someone at those companies. And that's one reason that I think that I encourage code newbies to go out there and get involved in the community. Even if you're only like popping in once a month to a meetup, go, because you're going to meet someone and that someone is going to want to help you get a job, hopefully at their company.
Yeah, that is such a good point, because I think that if you are trying to make those connections the moment that you need them, it's kind of too late, you know, but if you know, from day one, when you're first learning to code, if you start, like you said, going to meetups, tweeting people, getting involved, going to conferences, whatever it is that you can do. And a lot of these things are relatively accessible in terms of, you know, money and time. And you start building this network. By the time you get to a point where you say, okay, I need to find a job, you kind of already have relationships and you have people that you can lean on.
Right.
So 5 to 6 companies, you got a job offer that you accepted in 3 weeks. How did you know that that was the right offer for you?
So one of my biggest things was that they were willing to pay for me to go back to school.
Oh, interesting.
Yes.
Did you take them up on that?
Well, I actually don't think I'm going to. Like, that was something that was really important to me and something that we talked about and that I was interested in the time. Here's the thing. So my family's actually in California, even though I'm here in sunny Chicago. And I want
sunny for the first day, I heard.
Sunny for the first day, absolutely. And my thing is, like, my parents are getting older and blah, blah, blah. So I wanted to have the opportunity to move out to California. And I know the company I'm at right now just opened up a California office. There's that. Oh. Plus, there's the whole, like, paying for me to go back to school. And my thinking, well, this is one of the main reasons that I took it over the other offers that I had at the time, was because I figured if I moved out to California and I'm living in San Francisco, I'm going to have that piece of paper to be able to compete in that market. And I now realize that that's not true. Hmm. So I will not be going back to school. But like, that was one of the main reasons that, you know.
Yeah.
I took it.
So tell me a little bit more about the interview process. What kinds of questions did you get? What kind of people did you meet? What does that look like?
Well, usually there's kind of this weird pre-screening interview that you have sometimes with someone from HR or the company recruiter or someone like that. And they ask you very general questions, and typically they'll send you a coding challenge. That was another thing. I was warned that if a company doesn't require you to do a coding challenge, that's a red flag. Because companies should know how their programmers program, and there's really no other way to assess your skill set than that. So companies would send me a programming challenge. Some companies were like, you have 24 hours to complete this. Other companies were like, take all the time you need. and got those challenges, turned those in. And
what kinds of challenges were they? Were they like mathy, computer sciencey stuff? Was it like building apps?
No, not at all. Actually, one of the companies, there was a computer science part, and I like didn't – I was just like, I don't have a degree, so I'm not going to
do it. How did that go over?
They made me an offer, and I work for them now. So.
Oh, my God. That's hilarious. Really
well, so – I mean, every company is different, but typically, yes, there's a programming challenge. Some companies have like specific personality questions that are tied into it too, and I don't know how to answer those usually. So I usually just kind of skip those too. But yeah, do as much of the challenge as you can. It doesn't have to be perfect. I think going into a challenge, you should know what your strengths are and your weaknesses, and you should highlight your strengths and don't even try with your weaknesses. For example, one of the companies I interviewed for sent me a link to their programming challenge page, and I had to complete two different programs, and one had to be in Ruby because it was for a Ruby position, and the other one could be in the language of my choice. And that's all they really tell you. So my thing is, for example, test-driven development is one of my strengths, and it's something that is relatively new. But if you can write tests, companies are going to love you for it. So I test drove both of those solutions because I know that's one of my strengths. I also know that like Ruby is one of my stronger languages and Clojure is one of my stronger languages. So I did one with Ruby and then the other one I did in Clojure. And then I use specific design patterns, which I think, I wish I would have mentioned this earlier, but as code newbies, the sooner you can learn design patterns, the better off you will be. So I knew that like there were very specific design patterns that I wanted to highlight. So I made it a point to try to use those, even though like when I'm really coding, I'll use the best design pattern to solve that particular problem. But during the interview process, I was like, hey, it would be really cool if I use the repository pattern. If they're familiar with this, they're going to be impressed. And it worked.
Wow. It sounds like you were very strategic about how you did this.
Absolutely.
Good for you. So was there any particular part of the process that you were, that you struggled with, that you had a hard time with, anything like that? Or was it just all like super easy breezy for you?
For me, I didn't really understand the process. I didn't know what to expect. So I didn't know that like when you apply, someone will call you back, you'll talk to them, and then if the conversation goes well, they're going to send you a programming challenge. So I think I got like three programming challenges in like 2 days, and I was like hustling to like get them all done. And then I'd also started I didn't know like how long it would take me a job either, so I started picking up shifts at a restaurant that I used to work at. So on top of like finishing these programming challenges, I was now like working in the service industry again, which is kind of stressful.
But it was and also, tiring.
Yeah, but it was also a lot of fun. Like I worked with a lot of awesome people and I had great experiences while I did it. So there was like this weird like weekend where I kind of almost freaked out because it was a little bit too much for me. Mm-hmm. But at the same point in time, like I'm glad that I did it that way because I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, the process went a lot faster than it needed to, or then it did, or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, the interview process or the job search process in general is really stressful, right? And it's exhausting because even the process you went through where you have like this initial screening, then you do a code challenge, you have to explain the code challenge, and then I'm guessing you came in and maybe did some pairing in person, and it's a pretty involved process where you're kind of convincing people over and over again how awesome you are and how they should take a chance on you. And it can be just a lot. What advice do you have for people who are going through that process right now or who are going to get there pretty soon?
I would definitely advise them, if you have the opportunity, take as much time for yourself before you start searching, because that time is going to get eaten up very quickly. Make sure that you go in with like your game face on. Make sure that you're doing whatever you need to do to be confident and like happy first. Because if you go in and you're doubting yourself or you're in a bad mood because there's something else going on in your life, that's going to show. And that's going to be the impression that these people get, you know. Also, go in knowing kind of what you want out of the job. Go in with a positive attitude. That always helps. And go in and be ready to explain your code very well. And be ready to answer as many like weird questions as you can. So for example, I had a roommate at the time and we did mock interviews together. She does social media marketing, so she knows nothing about programming, but she asked me like a bunch of weird questions, and like strange questions that have nothing to do with your code will come up. And she asked me to kind of describe to her everything that was on my resume, and I did. And it was a really nice refresher because it made me realize kind of things that I should say, things that I should remove from my resume, because either like A, I didn't know them as well that I thought, or B, they just weren't right for the job that I was looking for.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Like interview questions are relatively standard. It's kind of like, how did you, especially if you're transitioning into a tech career, how did you get started? What makes you really excited about it? What have you done? You know, and you can definitely practice that. Like I talk to myself all the time just to, you know, practice those answers. And so, you know, taking advantage of whoever's in the house and just grabbing them and saying, can you just ask me these questions? And I'm just going to say them to you over and over again. And having those, you know, sound bites handy can take you very far in that process.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So, yeah, that's basically all the questions that I had, but I wanted to ask, was there anything about your journey that you wanted to talk about or any kind of final thoughts for people who are making that transition?
Well, about my journey, I should probably talk about like what I'm actually doing now.
Yeah, tell us what you're doing now.
Yeah, so I'm on the data services team at Avant, and it's kind of like this awesome spy versus spy position that I've been given. There's currently three of us on the team, and our job is to help curb fraud. So whatever the fraud team needs to help like catch fraud earlier than it's been caught before, that's what we do, which is really awesome.
Wow. That's intense. So how much of what you have to do did you already know? And how much did you have to learn on the job?
That's the funny thing. I'm learning so much every day. I think that like an apprenticeship is awesome, or a boot camp is awesome, or going to college and taking classes, those things are really awesome. But until you're in a production code base, there's just nothing like it, you know? I didn't know much. I already knew Ruby. I already knew RSpec. I kind of knew Rails. I think that I was a little better in Sinatra, if we're talking about frameworks, but like I knew enough about Rails to do the job that I do. But I'm learning so much about metaprogramming, for example. I think I may have mentioned that before. There's a lot of metaprogramming in our system. And then there's also this idea of like the domain knowledge that you gain, right? Like I mentioned before, every application is its own ecosystem, and there are things that you can do to make it better, and there are things that you can do to make it worse, and those things do not transfer to other systems. So a lot of it is just learning about like how it was built, you know, and how it functions. And sometimes you'll think something is broken, but in reality, it's not broken. It was actually built to break that way on purpose. So that's always really interesting.
So given that you're working at a startup, how much of the system that you work in now was already there, and how much of it are you kind of creating?
So we're leaning towards, we're a multi-service application. So there's, which is really cool. So there's like one main app, and then there are other services. And right now I've worked in the main app, and then I've worked in two additional services. So the main app is Rails, and then the other services that I've worked in are just pure Ruby code.
Very cool. And how do you like that domain of fraud? It sounds really cool, but also sounds kind of like a lot of responsibility too.
It is a lot of responsibility, but it's just so cool. When you get to learn, like, there's so many interesting types of fraud. There's so many ways to defraud a system. And it's like, you know, working to kind of catch it before it happens, or like catch it while it's happening. I don't know. It's just, it's interesting to learn about that.
So it's the topic of fraud isn't directly a coding topic, right? There's like all this, like you mentioned, all this domain knowledge about that you have to, I'm guessing that you have to first understand and appreciate, and then kind of say, okay, now that I get this space, how do I use my coding superpowers to solve these problems? Is that kind of the way that you approach it?
Kind of. Well, okay. So for example, for the two services that I'm working in, those were very recently built. So for the most part, there wasn't a lot of domain knowledge there. There was a little bit to learn, but not that much. For the main application, there's so much that I think I could work there for like 4 or 5 years and still not know, you know, the entire thing. So it's really about just kind of isolating the things that you need to know about, the classes and the components that you specifically need to learn about, and just kind of worrying about those.
So in order to build the solutions that you're building, you have to understand the problems that you're dealing with. And I think what you're really saying is that those problems may not necessarily be, you know, the same as other fraud-related problems in other companies, because your clients are your clients and they might have specific needs.
Correct. And really, okay, it goes with working in any kind of application. Like if you're working for something that deals in fraud, you're going to have to know the basic business rules for that. But if you're working for like, I don't know, you know, Walmart or CVS, you're going to have to know specific business rules for that. But until someone from business comes to you and says, this is what I need, you don't really need to worry about that upfront. So I think the thing, like code newbies, if you're looking for a job, just figure out how to code in general. Don't worry too much about the specifics of the business. Besides, those things change so often. Sometimes I build something and they're like, this is awesome. And then 2 hours later, they're like, just kidding. Because the business rules have changed.
Oh, it's funny because it's true. Yeah. Okay. So next, let's move on to some rapid fire fill in the blanks. Are you ready?
Ooh, I'm ready.
Number one, worst advice I've ever received is...
Gosh, there's been so much. There's been a lot of really good advice too, but I will say that there's a common thread in all of the bad advice that I've been given, and that it's this idea that what works for persons A, B, and C should also work for person D, and that's just not true. So if someone tells you, like, you're not going to be successful in the industry unless you do this one thing, you can pretty much just ignore it. You can take it as a suggestion, and if it works for you, awesome. If it doesn't work for you, do what you got to do.
So how do you know when that advice is helpful and not? Is it just as simple as trying it and seeing what happens?
I think that can be a really good way, but I also think it sometimes just comes down to knowing yourself. You know, like if you don't want to learn Java, if someone's like, the only way you can have, I've heard had people say, you know, the only way you can have like a long lasting career is if you learn like Java or C or one of these super low level languages. But if you want to go be a Python developer, or if you want to go be a Clojure developer, then go do that. And like, yes, you might want to know a little bit of Java, but like, if that's not what you want to do, don't do it.
Number two, my first app was about...
lots of X's and O's. Okay, so the first app I built was...
Tic-tac-toe.
Yes!
Yes! Woo!
How did you know?
He said X's and O's.
Oh, that's true. Dead giveaway. Yes, the first app I built was for Athlete. At the time, the application was, if you wanted to be a resident, you had to build an unbeatable tic-tac-toe. So,
an unbeatable? Oh my
yes. God. So with that, I was told... And by unbeatable, I mean like... you can lose or you can tie or the computer can win, but you can never beat the computer. Like anyone who's playing this game cannot beat the computer. So yes, I had to implement the Minimax algorithm, which is super awesome and super fun. And there may have been tears shed over it because it's super difficult as well. But yeah, that was the first thing that I built.
Nice. Number three, one thing I wish I knew when I first started to code is...
that you don't need a degree to be a software engineer.
At what point did you realize that?
It's something that like I realize every now and then, and then someone has to remind me of it. I think that I realized it for 100%, and I'm not going to have to be reminded of again now that I'm working at the fastest growing Chicago startup since Groupon as a software engineer. Like I said, even during the interview process, I was like, yes, I want to go back to school because I need to, but nope.
So next, let's do some shout outs. Do you have a couple for us?
I do. I have three, in fact.
Go for it.
So my first shout out is for the Pride Gem. Are you familiar with the Pride Gem?
Oh, yeah. Love my binding prize.
Yes. Love, love, love. Yes. If you're a code newbie and you're working on a project specifically in Ruby, it doesn't have to be Rails, but it can be Rails. You should definitely download the Pry Gem. It'll allow you to stick a statement that's just binding.pry anywhere you want, and it'll open up the IRB console smack dab in the middle of that code and let you dig around. It's great for debugging. It's great for just figuring out how things work as well. So that would be number one. Number two is my favorite programming book by Sandy Metz, Pooter. It's Practical Object-Oriented Design in Ruby. There are a lot of awesome programming books that were written by people with computer science degrees. And if you don't have one, they're very hard to read. Or they're just written by people who communicate in a way that I don't communicate. And for me, as a code newbie, it was just really easy to pick up Sandy Metz's book and read it and understand concepts that I was trying to understand by reading other books, but it just, the other books just weren't doing it for me. So you should definitely get a copy of that.
Yeah, and we're getting her on the podcast too.
That's awesome. I actually went
She's going to be on in June.
That's amazing. Everyone should listen to that podcast. It's going to be good.
Yeah, it's going to be great. I'm really excited.
And then my third would be Exorcism.io. Which is an open source project by Katrina Owen, who I believe you've already had on the podcast.
Yeah, we had her on a couple months ago. She's amazing.
She is amazing, yes. And Exorcism.io, I actually didn't get the chance to use it myself, but it's one of those things that I hear from other programmers who have used it, and it's really helped them in the beginning. It's mentorship coding, so you go on and you are paired up in a group and you get to solve a problem and you get feedback. And feedback is important. So that would be the third.
Awesome. Those are some great shout outs.
Good. I hope that they are helpful.
And for my personal shout outs, in the theme of interviews, have you heard of Interview Cake?
I have not.
So Interview Cake is something that I used for my technical interviews, and it was really good. I really liked it. So what happened is it's by a guy named Parker Finney, I believe is how you pronounce his last name. And he used to work as an engineer for Google and a bunch of startups, and he was helping his friend prepare for technical interviews and kind of giving feedback. And he thought, there might be kind of, you know, a need here for helping people do technical interviews. So he started Interview Cake, and there's kind of like a paid package as well. You know, if you're in the middle of job interviews and you kind of want a great package, but he also emails you once a week a little, I guess it's almost like a coding kata, but he emails you like a technical interview question with solutions on the website. So it's a really great way to prepare, and it's a really great way to kind of keep to stay on your toes, really, for possible interviews in the future. So definitely check that out. So recently RailsConf happened. I was really excited to see some code newbies join, and we had our first code newbie in-person meetup there, which was awesome. And one of our community members, Jared Smith, wrote about his experience. And if you haven't been to a tech conference yet and you're thinking about it, definitely check it out. It's a really great article. It's on the code newbie blog called My Rails Conference Experience. So take a read and kind of see what it's like to spend a couple days meeting new people and learning about new technical concepts. If you want to join the conversation, you can join us on Code Newbie Discourse, our online forum for people excited about code, or you can chat with us every week on the Code Newbie Twitter chat. Just search for hashtag Code Newbie and tweet with us every Wednesday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. You can learn more about that as well as show notes on this episode at codenewbie.org/podcast. If there's a topic you want to hear about or a guest you want to hear from, send us an email, hello@codenewbie.org. And we have our Code Newbie Slack community as well, which is available on our website, codenewbie.org. So check that out, and I would love to chat with you in real time and learn about your coding adventures. Thank you again, LaToya, so much for joining us. You want to say goodbye?
Thank you for having me, and good luck, everybody.
Thanks for listening. See you next week.